Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Friday, April 20th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 390. I'm your host, Austin Walker. I am joined today by Gita Jackson.
Hello.
Hi,
I'm Gita.
Hi.
How's it going?
And Ricardo Contreras, as always.
Don't believe the Ricardo? False start. Don't believe his lies.
No. That's a lie. Don't worry about that. That doesn't exist. How's it going? How y'all doing?
I literally just made my Vax appointment, as you heard me go through the last couple of seconds of that. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm feeling okay. All right. Gonna get the jab in 2 days. So excited. I made my appointment for last week for a place that was a 15-minute walk away from my house, except it was Johnson & Johnson. And it was on the day that they stopped giving out Johnson & Johnson was the day of my appointment.
God damn.
I woke up to a panicked phone call from my mom at 8 a.m. So afraid I was going to get a blood clot and die. Never asked that question when I took hormonal birth control and smoked like a chimney.
God. Well, I'm glad you're getting the shot in a couple days. this is the first one for you?
Yeah, this is the first one for me. My partner ended up having to go to the Bronx, which is aren't familiar with the geography of New York. We looked up how it was. The appointment was for him, and a relative made it for him. The appointment was at 7 a.m. in the Bronx, and he would have had to get on the subway at 5 a.m. to make it.
That's wild. One, yeah. I'm also like increasingly, I feel like a baby for whining about I had to refresh this webpage 80,000 times to get my appointment there are a lot. I have friends in various parts of the world who are like, yeah, dog, well, I don't know when it's coming.
You know, yeah, like, I have a friend.
I know someone in Canada who like got their first shot and their second shot is like 3 months away. But that's longer than that's supposed to be. Like, that's beyond the 50-day.
Yeah.
That's like length that the first shot
just
lasts
starting
for?
Over.
Yes, that's starting over. So shout out to everyone around the world.
Truly, it is like Emmanuel Mayberg from Motherboard. To me, it was like, it's the most New York shit in the world to be like, I'm not getting the shot till it comes to Brooklyn.
Yeah, 100%.
This life-saving vaccine.
Yep. This whole thing has been the least early bird gets the worm shit in the world, where it's like America just U.S. just fucked up. It's like everything about how to handle this. And then also because of, you know, patents and shit are basically getting this shit first. So,
yeah, it's the stupidest situation we could be in by far.
It's true.
Good job, America.
Did y'all get up to anything over the weekend that was nice?
I bought a skateboard.
Hell yeah.
Want to see it? Hang on.
Yeah,
no one who's listening to this can see it, but you can.
Let me see it. I haven't seen
it. We can describe it for the listeners.
All right, what do we got?
This is a sci-fi fantasy deck I got.
That's sick.
Whoa.
Right?
That is sick. Yeah, it is like a, what are those called? It's like a plateau or like, it's not a plateau.
It's a giant like mesa.
Plateau. A mesa, yeah.
Yeah, with a bunch of cowboys from a Western movie. I'm not sure which one, but it's so sick.
You're going to teach yourself how to ride?
Yeah. No, I've been sitting here. I have carpet in my office, and I've been sitting here just sort of practicing the the movements that you do an ollie.
Have either of you skated before?
No, I was explaining to the guy at the skate shop, like, this is something I've wanted to do for my entire life. Mm-hmm. But when I was at the age where people learned how to skateboard normally, like a teenager, mean boys in the neighborhood just talked me out of it. Uh-huh. And I'm 31 now, and I do not care what mean boys in the neighbor had to say to me.
Yeah, fuck those boys.
I was hanging out with former Vice employee Zoe Edelman, who used to work with us and helped us with some live events a couple times. We were talking about how the ability to ollie feels like magic. Like, if you've ever skated even a little bit, it seems to me as if the time from can skate to can ollie is like the cliff. It's like, okay, can you do this thing? And I, to this day, I can tell you, I understand theoretically what the foot motions are to make an ollie happen. I don't believe physics works that way. And yet, Zoe and I were at a park, and while we were having this conversation, literally a little kid was skating all around, like a baby. You know what I mean? Was skating. And this motherfucker's going to ollie, and it's going to make me sound like an idiot. I don't know. So listen, good luck in your quest. If you can ollie, you can do anything, in my opinion. So
ask my friend.
Master this power.
That's one friend. The friend who, the rich friend I keep alluding to, my friend Max Neely Cohen, who gave me the gaming PC I have that's very expensive because he was over screens because he had to. No, the actual reason is that he had to write a second novel, and he told me he was playing too much Crusader Kings. he needed to get rid of his computer.
That's a good reason to stop. That's a good reason to give away shit, I guess.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly.
But in the wild annals of this man's life, when I met him, he wrote me this email that was just like, here's everything I've done in my life. I love you, Max. If you're listening to this, which you definitely aren't, I love you. I think you're the amazing person. Also friends with Amy Rose from the Calder Desk Advice, who's the guy who put them in that game, Street Writer.
Gotcha.
Yeah, with the Street Fighter play on words with our friend Tasha did the pixel art for. Max like used to be a professional skateboarder.
That's wild.
And also was a DJ that was signed to Def Jam.
What?
Yeah.
That's a life. Right? That is a life.
And he wrote a novel. Went to Sarah Lawrence and wrote a novel. You know, like that's just how things happen.
Is that how it's supposed to happen? Shit, I'm fucking it up.
White people live charmed lives, I gotta say. Just need to find yourself a rich white guy that's willing to give you shit and just be a really, really good friend.
I've been trying. Yeah. And it's not coming together for me. I don't know. Maybe my strategies aren't right.
We need to get you a benefactor. Get you a patron.
Please.
Yeah.
Please.
Only old dukes or barons.
I mean, the problem is, this is the thing, is that like you're doing what you got to do. You're out here learning how to skateboard and meeting people who have, you know, charmed lives who can give you gaming PCs. And I don't know. I recorded 4 podcasts this weekend and barely got to play any video games. And that's not the way towards getting a benefactor. It just simply is not.
Yeah, see, you're positioning yourself as the benefactor here.
That's the problem, which is wrong. I don't have it like that. Yeah. Let's be fucking clear. The only thing I have like that is debt. So,
racks on racks on racks.
Racks on racks on racks on racks. I for what it's worth, I am happy with my ability to record 4 podcasts in a weekend and call that a couple days of work. I've worked harder jobs than that in my life. So
you know what? That's the hustle, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Speaking of hustles, I did play a game about working this weekend. Ooh. And it's one I can't remember if we talked about this on a past episode or not, but I did recently say that I'd been meaning to play it. That I hadn't gotten around to it yet, and I finally did. It is Wilmot's Warehouse. Have either of you played Wilmot's Warehouse?
Okay. I have not.
No.
So Wilmot's Warehouse is both. It gives me the brain scratch that like Tetris does, but also it's a walking anxiety like simulator. It's like a walking panic attack simulator. Oh, I'm gonna send you some icons, and I want you to describe what they are as I send them to you. Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
So what this is going to be tough because I'm just like screen grabbing them from a larger collection. All right. What have I showed? What have I sent you here?
That's banana.
Okay.
I was going to say boomerang.
Okay. This is perfect already. Tell me how else would you. Okay. So Kato says it's a boomerang. Gita says it's a banana. I'm going to send you another picture. You're going to tell me what it is. What is this?
That's an apple.
Okay. So if you had a big empty warehouse space mm-hmm. and your job was to organize it mm-hmm. and you got, let's say, three of that first one and three of that second one, would you put them together or would you put them in different piles because of what they are?
I mean, different for me, because I thought the first thing was a boomerang.
Totally. Right. And then you'd probably put them together.
If you thought they were both fruit, you could categorize them together.
Totally.
What is this?
Oh, that's Judaica.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Those are
religious objects for Jewish people.
Right. And so would you put that with either of these two, or would you put this in a third spot?
I would put that in a third spot.
Perfect. Good. Now, I'm going to send you two more. I'm going to send you four more. I'm going to do what this game does, ready? Which is, you got your basic, you got some stuff going on here, and then a truck pulls up and drops off a bunch of new shit.
The fuck is this?
So what do we got here? We got
1/4 of a boiled egg. A magic
oh, is that how you're
horseshoe.
Reading that? Okay, yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
I see, yep, 100%.
A club playing cards, only clubs.
Is that a bolt? Heart? Or no, that's a nut.
I can see that being a nut. And then we have a horseshoe and a magnet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this game is basically truck unloading simulator. This came out a couple years ago. You play this little guy named Wilmot, I guess, or maybe you work at Wilmot's warehouse. I don't know if you're working at Wilmot's warehouse or if you are Wilmot.
The Wilmot. But a
truck pulls up. It's a top down. You're looking at like just a black space. And a truck pulls up and drops off a bunch of shit. And then at the very top of the big warehouse, this is a screen that like you can move around, as you can't see the whole warehouse at once. You'll have people pop up who work in the other side of the warehouse and are like, I really need that half of that boiled egg. I need three of those. I need two clovers or two clubs or whatever.
One and a half boiled eggs.
Right, totally. And a clover. I need two triangles and three candles. Except they don't say that. They just show you the icon.
Right.
There are 200 icons in this game that slowly unlock over the course of play. Where I'm at now, which is only past like the first full year of play, the first full cycle of play, I've only like 48 of the 200 icons, and I'm already like, I don't, what the fuck, where do I put things, what goes where? So a lot of these icons, I just linked this trailer for you can see, like, are not as clear as here is a horseshoe.
Right,
you get into lots of, is this a banana or is this a a boomerang situation. You get lots of things that are just like, these are stripes, this is an octagon.
I love colors.
You get lots of, yeah, just colors. Things that are like, okay, well, this
is. I'd like
to
go to a warehouse and be like, I just want colors.
Can I get three dots and then a purple? I want a purple also.
This is a wholesale warehouse.
100%. And you do have a ton of space. The way it works is like you're a little square guy and all the icons are little squares. And you can go over them and hit like A to pick one up. You can hit, I want to say X to grab all alike things so that are tied to each other. So if you have like six microscopes, you can grab all six microscopes at once. There's a limit to how many things you can carry at once based on your an upgrade tree, basically, where you can like slowly upgrade to carry more and more things. But you also just, they are just like big weird shapes. As you grab like six things, there is a Tetris like quality to where like, oh, I didn't grab just like a rectangle of these things, I grabbed a weird U shape or a J or something, and now I have to fucking drag this stuff all over the place, and that's and like try to get it through the hallways that I've limited myself in because I've had to drag all this shit all over the place. And the thing that the best thing in the world, there's two things. One is the way it works is basically a truck pulls up, you get 2 minutes to unload the truck, and what I tend to do is I kind of do the, you know, in Dwarf Fortress where when like there you just say like, here's a pile area. It was like, just drop all my shit there. Just put all the shit in the pile. I do that. And then from there, I start to go like, okay, do I put. So, for instance, in my current game playthrough, I have grenades, bombs, explosions. Like anytime it looks like an explosion, I put all those together. And I recently did a re-inventory where I was like, you know what? I'm going to put anything that belongs in like a surplus store over there too. So like I have anything that reminds me of the military in that corner of my warehouse, like armor or like a what do you call, what's the symbol, why am I blanking on this, like a chevron that mm-hmm. looks like a lieutenant right, chevron right. or something mm-hmm. like that's all in the top left. But that fucks with me because the chevron is also an arrow in a sense. And I have all my arrows on the right wall. And there's a million arrows. Arrows going up and down to right and left. And then one of the upgrades is to get rid of the way the warehouse works is there, it's just like it's a big empty space. But then there's four columns, like four big, like almost like support beams.
Mm.
And one of the upgrades you can get is getting rid of those support beams to give you more ground space.
Right.
And when I did that, that's awesome because it's like it gives you so much more space. But I was using those to organize, right? Like on my top left one, I had all of my like 1 dot, 2 dot, 3 dot, 4 dot, whatever the colors, those are there. And getting rid of that actually went like, oh my God, all this stuff is just floating in nothing. I want to push them against the wall so I can like better situate it.
Right.
But you can't just put everything against the wall because there's not enough wall space for everything. So it's, you can see what I mean when I say it's kind of a nightmare. So the truck shows up. Sorry, let me talk through the game again. Truck shows up. You get 2 minutes to organize your shit. Then the gate opens and your coworkers go like, hey, I really need 6 rainbows and 2 umbrellas. And you got to be like, did I put those both in the same place? Are those in my weather category? Or because I can imagine playing this game and be like, someone else could be like, I would organize this by color. I'd put all my reds together. I'd put all right. my blues together. And that might be a better way of doing it than what I do. I don't know. Maybe there's a limit to my organized by what this reminds me of.
This seems like a game that I would play and would stress me out very much, but I would be extremely good at it. You know, this is totally. Like, would allow me to do the level of So did you see that viral video that was going
to
like,
I actually skipped the best part for this for you, specifically.
Oh, great, great.
You finish 3 of these levels, and then it goes, oh, this is a stock phase. There's no timer anymore. Fucking go wild. Reorganize everything how you want it.
Oh my God, yes.
It rules. That part where you're like, oh, I got through the day and now I can like
it's like fix the it. End when you get your last order in Cooks are Delicious. You know? When like, you finally get that bell.
Do whatever the fuck I want.
And
I
you're
can
closed
just chill.
And you're just like, you are gonna wait up for a while for your pasta. Like,
yep, 100%. Anyway, what were you gonna say? You were gonna say it reminds you of a video.
Oh no, did you see this viral video that was going around over this weekend about is your pantry game restocked like this?
I did not see this.
It was absolute outrage bait. It was like someone trying to go viral for sure. They were just like they bought a bunch of cereal in a bunch of Tupperware containers and were like pouring the cereal out of the cardboard boxes into the Tupperware containers. Part of me was like, all of the food in this video is junk food, and that is really, like, I'm sorry if this is what your pantry restock game looks like. I like to eat fruits and vegetables. Like, they had just, like, granola bars and, like, individual bags of chips, and it's like, why don't you get a big bag of chips or just make some fucking, put some kale in the fucking oven. You got chips now, idiot. Like, come on.
Oh, wow. I found this video, and it's not just, these are, when you say individual bags of chips, you literally mean like snack packs.
Snack packs like, of chips, like you are stocking the snack section in an office, you know? Like, come on.
That's not what I want.
Don't eat like
even
an adult.
Even have like the little Pringles cans. What are you doing?
Like a little Pringles cans are what really set me off because I was like, that's just not efficient. They are resealable.
Yes. Come on. They're already, yes.
All of these things come in their own containers already. And it's like, fuck? And they're not actually stocking the cabinet so that it is like fully stocked. There's a lot of space in between items.
Right, because
like
they're putting even items that are in containers in other containers.
Yes.
Which is wasting space.
Absolutely.
I get the cereal thing. The cereal thing I fully get. I think that makes sense.
It stays fresher longer also.
It stays fresher longer 100%. But the second that you're putting cans of stuff in another big plastic container,
it doesn't make
you've
any
lost
sense.
The fucking plot. Yeah, 100%.
But I did see those and see this video, and like I did this critique, and I was like, I'm not going to comment. I'm not going to quote retweet. It's just trying to make me mad. But I did think immediately, I need to buy more containers for everything I own. Everything I own should be in a box, which is then divided into smaller boxes.
That's the thing. Yeah. It feels good to put stuff in boxes and to like move stuff around and be like, okay, this is here, this is here, everything here makes sense. The rest of the world doesn't make sense, but this makes sense to me.
Yeah. So like I went before I learned like how to clean my physical objects, that was like just go through your entire computer like library system and reorganize everything, and then it makes perfect sense to you and only you.
This I need to do. My computer like files are just a nightmare right now. Outside of like the podcast stuff, which I have like a little bit more orderly.
Yeah.
But like my downloads, my files, my PDFs, like I need to do a deep
inventory. You need to do Wilmot's Warehouse on that.
I need to do some Wilmot's Warehouse for real. If I could connect Wilmot's Warehouse to my file like hierarchy and just move my actual files around using Wilmot's Warehouse, that would be ideal.
Because it's the same issue. You don't know from the file names what categories these things belong to.
If I could just get little icons that show me what they are, that would be, I guess that's what Windows Explorer does do. But but if I need to know what's inside of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Where are the like representational UIs that we all imagined in the 90s? You know, I feel like that would actually be better.
Please let me fly around in the cyberspace of like hackers.
Right. Yes.
Please. I'm begging you.
This PDF is a little person.
It's a little person who like does a dance or something. If I can make all of my icon images
reciting what the text is on the PDF.
Yeah, I mean, if I like press it and then it pops up and it's just whoever is reading the book that is.
Tane.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's Tane.
It's Tane. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, 100%. Yes. Finally, we've gotten where we need to get to. either of y'all play anything this weekend?
I have been playing some video games. I know.
Hell yeah.
Shocking. No, I play video games all the time. I've been playing a couple games. I've been playing, I got a code for the new Stellaris DLC.
Oh, awesome.
And
Nemesis, right?
Nemesis, yeah. So the big thing I was interested in this was espionage. But really what has been drawing me into playing the game, because when you add DLCs to really, really long, like 4X strategy games like this, it's hard to like tell when the DLC kicks in, you know, it's much more difficult than other games. So you kind of have to just play forever and then like think about what you just did and how it was different from before.
Yeah.
But I haven't played Stellaris in a long time. So a lot of things are different from before. This game is really different. Like,
did you play since the population stuff changed? Since it got like top units versus having just kind of abstract,
like an abstract representation of population. Yeah. Yes, I do remember that stuff.
Okay.
Although it seems to have changed even more the way that you organize resources on cities, where sort of like the visualization of how adding buildings to your planets and like what jobs are needed is just much, much clearer.
So that
number one has just made the beginning of this game, like I'm still in the early game, which is something that was really surprising me. I remember playing Stellaris and being able to get through the early game
to
so
the
fast.
Mid game where you're like six or seven other empires are around you pretty quickly.
But I played, you know, usually in previous games of Stellaris I would play get to the mid game in like 2 to 3 hours. I played 2 to 3 hours of this game, and what I found was that I was having to stop and pause and look at things and read things so in so much more detail than before, because there's just more information about what the game is actually doing, which has made the game so much more interesting to play.
Yeah, I've not played this new demo or this new expansion yet. I've heard that the mid game gets weird now because of a patch change, not a expansion change. I think that the way Paradox Grand Strategy games work, for people who don't know this, is whenever there's a big expansion, there's also a big free patch that drops along with it that shakes stuff up, right?
It was named after Philip K. Dick, the Dick
This
patch.
One was, yeah, the Dick update. The Dick. Finally, we got the Dick update here.
Dick 2.0.
Please, 3.0. They're on that 3.0 Dick. And my understanding is, they made a population thing change in this that's about how your global population is calculated or something, or capped, that apparently really dramatically changes the mid game in a way, or like I would say like the late mid game, not early mid game, not like I found a bunch of people mid game, late mid game, where it's like, and now this is it. This is what the map is, like that part of late mid game. And that seems to be either buggy or people have been negative on it. I know this because I almost played this game and I was like, I'm gonna wait for the next like the hot fixes to start hitting. You know, you know. But so much of the stuff that this new expansion promises is like stuff I've wanted in Stellaris for so long. And they've been like slowly getting there in terms of, like you said, the espionage system that's supposed to be in this, which
it was to go from Crusader Kings 3, which I've also been playing a lot of recently.
Sure.
Because I played the flavor pack for the Northmen flavor pack. If you want to hear about that, I've got opinions about that also. so I've been playing that, which is like, it's a very polished game. And the new mechanics that they've been adding just add depth and substance to it. And it's really remarkable, especially in terms of like autonomy of characters that you don't control, how much the game really feels like it's just doing stuff while you are making your own plans, and how it, the game will like anticipate your plans and undercut them. You know, I had a situation where I had raised a very, very good son to be my heir, and I was about to die. I was so close to death. I was like 68, just waiting for it. And then my second son murders my heir and murders me.
What?
I was just like, bitch, he was about to die.
Fuck? Yeah.
Come on.
Just give me this last year. What the fuck?
God. Brutal. Like,
everything, you're going to get what you want. Yeah. Just chill for a second.
Seriously. And then just, that was a whole situation where I had to abandon that save because he wasn't in my dynasty, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. That's annoying.
It was really annoying.
But compare coming from that back to Stellaris,
you just where feel like
the vibe is different.
You
but
feel like nothing's happening a lot of the time in Stellaris because space is big and you're just not in, it's not like Crusader Kings where you generally just know your neighbors. 100%. In Stellaris, you are like discovering your neighbors all the time, and that means if you don't know anybody that's near you, you don't have the ability to do that social stuff that I like.
You're basically just doing resource extraction, right?
Yeah,
you're just like
yeah.
I'm going to send my ships around and then get this energy and then get this. Yeah, like
you just build a bunch of science ships and send them to go auto survey, and it's just like kind of tedious. It does add things to colonization now, which means. Like the population stuff really affects colonization and it really is a drain on your resources. So at least you get like a little bit of push-pull when you are building new things and then having to sustain them with resources. It actually incentivizes you to explore more. I always felt like in Stellaris before the change to the population stuff, the incentive to explore once you got over a certain amount of planets is just like not there.
At that point. You know? Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
This is one of those things where it's like, if you play enough of this game, you can probably go through the game start settings and be like, okay, I'm going to make it so I fucking hit people sooner.
Yeah.
So I can get into the social play. But it's always like I find with 4X games and grand strategy games that it actually takes a lot of time before I'm confident going in and tinkering with early game settings or like the base game settings. And like, how many planets are there? How close are you to your neighbors? Because I don't want to fuck it up. And I always, you don't learn that you fucked something up in some ways until 8 hours into a session where you're like, ah, you know what? This whole game is actually like a little too rushed for me. I want it to be a little slower. I wish Attain would pop off the screen and talk to me and dance and tell me, ask me what sort of game I wanted, what my pacing was, and then fiddle with the settings for me.
If there was just a box for games like this that was like, show me the new shit I just installed.
That would be great.
That would be great. You just
load me into like a get me to mid-game save that's like ready to go. That'd be sick.
That would be sick. I am enjoying some of the new changes in that you can the social stuff, not just in espionage, has changed. You can now like create embassies and create soft alliances in a way.
That's cool.
Yeah, that stuff I've been playing with, and that stuff is very cool. It reminds me a lot of what they've done with intrigue in Crusader Kings 3, where intrigue and diplomacy are like these mirror image tracks at this point in Crusader Kings 3, where intrigue is how you get things how you want by asking secretly and taking favors and manipulating people. And diplomacy is like kind of the same thing, except you're doing it in a nice way. Diplomacy and intrigue are both such powerful skills in Crusader Kings 3. And there's like essentially there's a non-violent, non-war track in terms of getting things that you want. And I can see that espionage and like the other social diplomacy stuff they've added there, it's mirroring a little bit what they've done mechanics wise in Crusader Kings 3, which makes me excited because I like that stuff in Crusader Kings 3. It feels, it almost never feels as useful to be diplomatic in other games that are similar to Crusader Kings. And in Crusader Kings 3, I've just, I've ended wars and created empires just by being nice to people, and I love
that. Right, just by talking it out, basically.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you have you gotten a chance to check out one of my bigger surprises this year, Star Dynasties yet?
I did check out Star Dynasties, actually.
Well, what did you think of that?
Well, I mean, you can tell it's a game that's like not quite finished. There's like not a lot of shit there.
It's early. It is extremely early access for sure.
Yeah, I did. You know, there is a funny thing I realized when I sort of stopped playing, and I was like, I'm going to wait to see what more stuff they add to this. Where if your leader is disliked at all, just all of the alliances you've built will be immediately broken. Everyone does the math and they're like, fuck this guy.
Actually, you know what?
Actually,
none of us like this motherfucker. Yeah, he's done.
Yeah. We don't
get rid of that motherfucker.
Yeah. But I really, really liked that game in terms of your goal in that game essentially is to not go to war and is to marry and like party your way into having a lot of huge alliances. I really liked that. And it feels a little bit like, you know, you can feel it here in this Nemesis update.
The thing that's cool about that to me is the thing of just like, there is no action that doesn't have a repercussion in Star Dynasties. Whereas I can feel in Stellaris, and I like Stellaris a lot, but there are times when it does not necessarily feel like I'm earning a long-term reputation.
Yeah.
Because people who aren't my immediate neighbors don't necessarily aren't as clued in that way, and they're just not that many. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So aligned ideologically that they don't mind when I'm stomping on someone else nearby. Whereas in Star Dynasties, because it's more like CK, where there's like individual actors
who can
like that was my cousin or that's my, you know, my sister-in-law. Mm-hmm. They're going to have beef with you on it for years. You know? It is early. It is definitely early. And I just do want to say I think they just dropped a roadmap and then a new update.
Ooh.
The roadmap late last month, and then they just dropped a new update this week. My guess is it's still, you know,
they got a ways to go. Away, but it's like very polished for this early in its development. Totally. And really, really fun. I think the lack of character in Stellaris, or the lack of the feeling like the people you are interacting with are characters. That's the thing. You know, like, there's a lot of these things that add, you know, your leaders live longer and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I never feel attached to my leaders. You know, I never feel as if there is an actual real functioning society in these worlds that I built. I love running through the like species creator and like picking all the ideals.
Yeah.
But then when I play them, I don't feel as if I've made a society, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's always the thing I bounce off of.
I've had some good times with it, but it's almost always, you know me, I'm like bringing half of it to the fucking game, right? Or the other thing that's happening is I'm streaming. When I've played Stellaris in the last couple of years, it's almost always on stream.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that with an audience, you can start to give things that added like juice that isn't necessarily there by itself. So like one of the last times that we played, I remember we had a big, there was like a pair of major NPCs who had the same last name, and we're like, oh, they like our brother and sister and they were born at the same time. And like when the first of them died 80 or 90 years later, it was like, oh my God, they've seen so much. Like they were, one of them was like the first president of the group and one of them was the first like scientist, and they swapped places a number of times, and you know, you can start filling in that gap. It's nowhere near CK, right? It's nowhere near these people have personality traits. I mean, they do have some personality traits, but there's no canvas to show them on. Do you know what I mean? It's just a bonus to mining or a bonus to warfare, like to shooting fast or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, my dream had always been that Paradox would make CK in space. That's just not what they made. They made Civ in space with a little more personality.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
I want a choice. To be able to like trace the lineage of leaders for my empire, you know?
100%.
I want elections to feel like they matter. I want the ethic shift of populations to feel like they matter more. And that's the thing that's not really getting there for me.
I'm curious if you keep playing this session, I'm curious if you get far enough in. Have you played since the big Galactic Senate update hit?
Yes. And Galactic Senate stuff.
That stuff gives a little bit of that feeling that stuff is shifting. There are alliances and backstabbing and whatever. But it's kind of, it's not late game, but it's so deep into the mid game that you just don't get any of that up front, and that can be frustrating.
Up front, it's just like, it's kind of a, it's not like there's nothing to do, but it's lonely. And like, I made these weird hive mind slug creatures, and I want them to, they're really nice, but they just live in a hive mind, and I just want everybody to meet them.
Yeah, and maybe join the hive mind. Maybe things would be better if they were part of the hive mind.
I think so. I think, you know, we're not going to make anybody, but if we can convince you.
But yeah, but maybe we talk you into it. Yeah. Have you tried being part of the hive mind?
It's pretty great.
Try it. Just link up for a second. We'll see how you feel.
Link and Bill.
I feel great. Yeah, hive mind is great.
Exactly.
I'm just vibing now.
All right. I feel like we should take a break and come back, and we'll dig into some more stuff. So BRB.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We are back. Kato, what have you been up to?
Hey. Playing a bunch of demos for things.
Okay.
Because they looked interesting. I got an email about one of them, Midnight Protocol.
Midnight Protocol.
It's being published by the same people who published Star Dynasties, which is why I got this email. So
Star Dynasties. Sorry, this is just how good. I have to read these now.
Great.
Yeah.
Talking about Midnight Protocol. Midnight Protocol.
Midnight Protocol.
The thing is actually Midnight Protocol to me is actually sounds like a. Kato, I don't know. Mm. I don't know how old are you, Kato?
I'm 32.
All right, yeah, okay. You remember being little and being in the supermarket and going to the checkout counter, and then behind the checkout counter, there was a little, like, video section sometimes. Like, not behind it, but, like, up against the front wall of the supermarket.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'd be, like a little
depends
video store.
Depends on the supermarket.
Of course, yes. I'm extremely talking about the Pathmark in Pleasantville, New Jersey, which is not where I'm guessing you went and did your supermarket shopping.
In Florida, it was the Albertsons had the video section.
But do you remember you went up and there was like movies you had never heard of before?
Right. Yes. Because
it was like straight to VHS stuff.
100%.
But then like straight to VHS and then straight to your supermarket checkout section.
Yeah.
And you would find some
tiers.
Uh huh.
Right. Exactly. And it was, you know, like B movie actors from the 80s who, like, I'm not dissing your I don't know. Why am I blanking on, like, the biggest 80s dude? The dude who was, I'm blanking on when you absolutely could not get Arnold Schwarzenegger, you would get this dude instead.
Not Van Damme, right?
I'm not talking about Van Damme. Oh, this is.
He was his own hot commodity.
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Straight to VHS actors is what I'm typing into Google here. Let's see. Well, that's not. This is now looking at a movie called.
Just look at the cast list for The Expendables, dude.
Oh, you're right. That is actually that is literally the play. Thank you. This is why we need you in my life. Because you're right. This motherfucker is going to be on here for Dolph Lundgren. Is who I met 100%.
Yeah,
I knew it immediately. Wow. Thank you for solving this. You would see some Dolph Lundgren shit,
sure.
And all of that shit looked and sounded like the words Midnight Protocol.
Yeah.
And like some synth hit. Would you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get that. Yeah, it's great. I want that version of a trailer.
Right.
Yeah,
that's what the trailer is. In the world, and then
exactly. Yeah. Yes. He was a CIA operative that knew too much.
Midnight.
I know too much. They're not going to let me live. She was an intelligence analyst with nothing to lose. My family hates me. I have nothing to lose. Like that style of.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect. I love your impression. It's so good.
Thank you.
That could be any movie.
That could be any movie from that era that I saw at the Pathmark in Pleasantville.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the actual Midnight Protocol that we worked hard on.
Oh, right, and this is a podcast about video games.
That's right.
Yeah. Midnight Protocol is a turn-based strategy.
Like, in my heart, Midnight, I'm like, Midnight Protocol. Every time you say it.
It is
what happens when there's no whites on the podcast.
Turn-based strategy game. Does this work? No, that's just the text. Never mind.
That's just the text.
I tried to copy a link. It's on Steam though, yeah. And they have a demo that is like the first few hacks that you do. And what's interesting about this is that essentially they've kind of mixed a turn-based strategy game into hacking, like the kind of hacking names that you like kind of see over and over again, like. When like programs are called ICE, right? Like that is a specific type of hacking world that you're going into. And so this is like kind of, you're looking at, when you hack this thing, you're looking at nodes. So
it reminds me of something like the node network from hacking in like Deus Ex or something like that, where there's like nodes connected by very bright lines.
Right.
And presumably like, they all have different effects and shit.
Yeah, and so movement happens along those lines, and usually what you're doing is interacting with the node that you're on. You're setting up programs that will either drain it or download information, or there is also a kind of just constantly taking up trace where the system is trying to find you. And so you have a program that's called Cloak, that's if you're running Cloak at full power, it will has a 75% chance to block trace from actually finding you. And basically, depending on the system, the trace has like 10 little dots under it, or sometimes there's only 3 dots. And once 3 of them fill, you've been found, and you have to like
jack out. And is that you're done? If they okay. So that
you have like enough moment to like jack out, but you will lose. So one of the big things you have to do is like you're stealing money because you need to A, survive, B, buy more programs and stuff to hit.
Yeah, I know what
targets.
It's like to live. I get you
exactly. But so
is the structure of the game then that there is, you have kind of a meta layer where you have a collection of programs and presumably some sort of computer or deck or something.
Yeah. So like all of this
and then
is like
go
happening.
On. You go on individual runs,
yes.
Or is it more? Is it? Are those runs like proc gen or are those linear?
Those
story
are
things, or
in the demo at least they're linear. As far as I know, they're always the same. They're gonna be like linear, and it's always the same thing. So like once I play the full game, I will know these first 5 and be able to do them pretty quickly, probably because they're the way that like where ice happens. Ice always occurs in between nodes, basically. So like if you're trying to move between one to the other, you'll bump into it or it'll affect you. But you have programs that can like sniff them out. And the big thing about this is that programs take up a memory space, essentially. So you have to also manage how much memory a program is using. But like let's say Cloak, which is like 75% to not get hit by the trace that the system is doing. If I lower the amount of memory it's using, that falls to like 30%. Right? So like
That's interesting.
You're managing the you start and I don't know, eventually you can probably upgrade this because I've seen also there is a hardware component that isn't in the demo, but it's shown in some of the trailers. But for the beginning, you start with 8 memory slots basically. And so if I run Cloak using all 8, that's 75% chance that
which
I'm
is damn
get,
good, but then you're not going to have memory.
I don't have memory to do
anything
else. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I like that. That's a fun switch up. This idea of like I'm devoting this many resources to this one program is pretty distinct. That's fun.
Totally. And normally, so the way that you have basically the basic moves are move from one node to the next connected node, and then interface with whatever node you're currently like focused on. And so if you like are on a financial node, which is where like money is kept, you can interface with it to just suck money out like manually, but you only have 2 actions a turn, right? So I can like interface, and it'll give me, I think you take 30 each time. Or you can run a program called Leech, which will automatically tick up, but it takes minimum 2 memory slots. If you give that program 8 memory slots, it drains like 100 credits at a time, right? So there's this balancing act of how much risk you want to take, like, because you also have like specific objectives, and some of them will be like, you want to drain all of the memory slots in here, but if you have to do it with a certain speed before you get caught, maybe you'll want to leech on one and then move over to the other one and manually drain it while the other one's being leeched. There's lots of different ways you can go about it. There's also like just in the demo, there's different ways to deal with ice. Like you start off with, you can basically deal damage is how it's like abstracted out. But like each ice has like an HP pool. You have icebreaker programs that will damage that ice and break it down. There's also, even though there's a tunneling program, which is like you can basically ignore it as long as the tunneling program's up, but the tunneling program of course also takes memory. So it's like the tunnel will stay up for a certain amount of turns, which means for like those 3 turns, even if you're not using it, for those 3 turns that memory's slotted away. And so you have to deal with the other systems that are happening without that memory. So that's kind of the basic gist of it. The one other thing about it is that it's all what's the word I'm looking for? Is the word diegetic or not? I can't tell, but like basically
diegetic means everything is inside of the thing. Yeah.
Right. Like so like it's you're using your keyboard to type, and like that's how you interact with the terminal.
So you're saying like run program, you're typing run program X or the name of the program or whatever.
So you like type in cloak and then you type in SL cloak 3 to give 3 slices of memory to the cloak.
And how much of a hacker man do you feel like when you're typing?
So much!
It's well, that game is worth it, right?
The hack feel is very, very good. Because you're just fucking you're just fucking typing this shit out. And at a certain point, like after I had played the first couple of levels a couple times, knowing where the ice was already, because they are like static levels, I was just to be able to like bop 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 bop, like not stop typing sort of thing. You can start typing the way it ticks over, like you have to hit end to end your turn, and then like the system does its turn and any of your programs that are running do its turn, but you can start typing your next command and like waiting for your turn to come back, then hit enter as soon as it, which feels really good, just like having it all ready to go. So this is the main game is turn-based, but after you finish the demo once, it unlocks a real-time version, which is fucking sick. Wild. So what happens in the real-time version is there's no instead of the trace being like every turn there's a certain amount of chance, what the trace is a countdown clock, and you can slow the clock by using your stealth things. But otherwise, it's just like running real time, like a clock is running down. So if you can type fast enough, you might not need your like stealth programs to like slow the time down. And basically, the memory units basically become cooldowns, right? Like certain things can only be used so much, and then like once you have a certain amount of things happening at the same time, you can't do any more, but you can still move around, right, in real time. Like, you can move as much as you want in real time. But, it's a really, really neat game. And this demo, it's really interesting because it also has a couple of secrets in it, which is all I'll say, because they're really fun to kind of uncover. There's even secrets that are meta secrets, which I also won't say much more of, but, like, there are secrets outside of the terminal you're playing in the game that are related to the game. I don't really want to spoil too much, but it's just like it really leans into like hacking.
That you're in the world and I think I've already put it together.
Yeah.
God, I'm gonna DM you. Great. I'm gonna DM you my thought and see if you can just say yes or no.
Okay, sounds good. No, there isn't. Okay. But
they
there's, a, there's something
they
else.
Done the thing I said.
Yeah. You know what? They may be down the line. Who knows? That seems like you're in the right space.
I'm not going to say it in case someone thought it. And I don't want to eliminate an option that someone may have had. Right. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. But no, it's definitely in that wheelhouse kind of.
Okay. Sure.
And then aside from all this, basically in between missions, you're getting emails from people. You're trying to, you play as a person whose like username is Data, which is like the simplest hacker username, but you were doxxed and then jailed. And then released early because they couldn't actually, they ended up not being to actually pin the thing on, pin the crime on you. But you're
too good.
You're basically, yeah, you're basically back to kind of figure out
how. See, anytime I hear that though, I feel like this is my like drama brain is tingling and I'm like, I bet, what if you're not even a person? What if you're a program
that has
fake memories?
Look, I mean, I'm not going to say what happens, but some shit goes down inside of the fucking demo. And like, if you watch some of the trailers, you'll also see some shit. There's very obviously some like AI, some
shit is going
some,
on. Yeah.
Some Ghost in the Shell stuff. Yeah. Like, there's, it's, it, which is, I'm really interested to see where that goes. But I also really enjoy that they kind of have this rep system, which is like white hat, gray hat, black hat. And it's always interesting to see when that sort of white hat, black hat dichotomy is set up in like hacking fiction, what, where that, where those hats hang.
What pushes you one direction or the other in that?
Right, exactly. Way, and what's interesting is they've set up white hat as something about, as more about altruism than about following law or being like a corporate.
Oh, that's interesting.
And black hat is like, you're going to do things for your own benefit that might put other people in danger. Which is an interesting, when usually, white hat means you're working with corporations, you're working as a hacker for some company. And like, no, you're still hacking and you're still kind of like draining resources from some megacorps, but you're doing it in a way that is going to help other people instead of like kind of keeping
it for yourself. Is that stuff just story stuff or are there also...
It will affect it will affect eventually what types of programs you have available to you in the shop and different connections. And there are apparently also some different like, you know, a certain maps will only unlock if you go, if you have more enough of one reputation or the other. So, there's a lot of really interesting and like I love that the dichotomy there has changed to being like, okay, like you're obviously a hacker. You're obviously outside of what this society deems is legal, but we're judging you based on whether you're helping or hurting other people, not just like whether you're helping or hurting corporations, right?
Yeah.
So
I need to play this one. This is out. There's a demo now, but it's out later this year. Summer is what it says.
Yeah, it says summer. But that demo is real fun and being and doing it twice because of the. Oh, there's the other. That's the other thing that I forgot to mention, which is kind of also terrifying, is that each time you do a real hack, quote unquote, like if you're actually in infiltrating a system, you can only do it once.
Oh,
because once you get caught, you're locked out. Huh. And so like this is, I'm kind of curious how that's gonna play out. There is a way to roll back if you like, if you get like super fucked, you can, there's a button that you can hit to roll back the, like you try over it before you exit. But it's like, once you've once you've decided to exit, you're like done.
You're committing to having failed that.
Yes, run, exactly. Which I think is interesting to note. And I wonder how they balance that and whether or not you can kind of, find yourself in a situation where you can't actually make any progress. So I'm curious to see how that structure kind of like plays out long term, but for now that is an interesting kind of distinction because there is one that is like a virtual, it's just like this is a virtual system, this isn't a real system, this is a virtual system that you can like play around in. It's called the playground, and so that you can do as many times as you want, which is fun. But then I unlocked a few secret ones and I was like, oh, I can only do these once, and they were like difficult.
Even if you get out successfully, I feel like if you get out successfully, you should be able to get back in.
I feel like there should be a thing for that if they don't like get a trace on you. But I think it's like there's always going to be maybe there's a cover your tracks program down
that's
the line
what,
or some shit.
That's
right?
The classic. Yeah, if you ever played Uplink,
right?
Uplink filled with that shit of just like, all right, before I go, I'm clearing these logs.
Right.
No one's going to see that I was here. So
But yeah, it's really, really interesting. Definitely.
This is also just making me, like, I'm excited for this. I don't want to take away from this new thing, but watching this trailer and like thinking about this stuff just makes me want to replay Invisible Ink of all time. But I have not played Invisible Ink in probably 2 years. So I need to.
It's time
to go back.
And that's Clay,
go
right?
Back to the thing I love the most. Yeah, have you not played
Invisible
Ink?
No, I've never
so
played
good. It's really, really good.
Yeah. It's really good.
I want to play it now, too.
Yeah. There's stuff in that game that I've, like, barely tinkered with because it was DLC stuff. And, like, I played that DLC, but I did not, like, go hard on that DLC. So maybe I should just spend some time with Invisible Ink this week and recover my mind. You know, like, this
sounds good to me.
Hell yeah.
That sounds good
mind
to me.
Mind recovery sounds good to me.
Just in general, I would love to recover my own fucking mind, honestly. Anything else y'all want to shout out before we go into emails?
I have another quick one if you want.
Oh, sure.
This one's really quick because this game is even further out. It's called Unbeatable. It's a rhythm game.
Yeah. There's a Kickstarter for it right now, right?
Yeah, and they also have a demo out on their itch page, which has like five
songs.
This
has like one of the fucking smoothest trailers I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my fucking god, it's so good.
Pita, did you see this?
No, I haven't seen it.
I'm going to link this to you because I need you to respond as
fucking
we're talking about it.
Okay.
Because it's so fucking
basically the if you know Studio Trigger, if you watch anime and you know Studio Trigger, this is what if Studio Trigger made an anime about a rock band that is fighting monsters, which is basically Fooly Cooly kind of like esque. But essentially, it's a
new
two button.
By the way, did any of you watch those? Should I watch those?
I heard they're nothing to write home about.
Okay.
Yeah.
If they were really good, I feel like I would know, right?
Right?
Yeah,
right. I like probably. Didn't hear, I heard a lot come like, oh wow, they're making new ones, and then like nothing else. So I was like,
yeah,
probably not great.
Yeah, I didn't see that Ghostbusters movie either, you know? Don't got it. I got the old Fooly Cooly, I'm good.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, so you're your band fighting monsters.
You play as Beat. Which is a singer of a band, and the demo itself is like very much just you're picking us like Guitar Hero style. You're picking a song. There's no story and stuff.
Right.
But
it's just like the mechanic.
Just the mechanic of the combat mechanic. It is a two button rhythm game, which you know it seems deceptively simple at a time. The buttons are up and down, and. Basically, you have enemies coming horizontally across the screen towards you. You're in the center or off to the left or right, depending on where they're coming from. And you just need to hit up and down as they like reach the line in front of you. Now, it gets much more complicated than that because the way that they present the needing to hit up or down is like infinitely different. And there's also like lots of little tricks where sometimes you have to hit an enemy three times and like the first time will be down and then it'll move up. As it's like in place, and you have to hit it up, hit the button up, like at like it's kind of like the representation of an eighth note following a quarter note, like
right,
two like
sure.
On the beat or whatever. There's like there'll be like obstacles that when you hit up, you like beat she like jumps up, so there'll be obstacles that you have to like avoid by
jump over.
And then there's enemies that require multiple hits. There's enemies where you're holding the button down, obviously. And sometimes it'll zoom out and you'll see, like, you'll be dead center and there'll be enemies coming from both sides. And those will be time, like, you'll be able to hit, like, you don't have to hit left or right. You only ever have to hit up or down. Like, she'll automatically move to the...
But your eyes now have to account for both sides,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. You're not having to process the information in a different way.
Yeah. That's fun.
And it's like, very intense for only having two buttons. It does this thing that I don't always enjoy, but I generally get over if the music's good enough, of the way that they've tracked this. If you think about like a rock band, for example, they track and map the button presses to individual instruments, right? So you kind of know, even if you're just like listening out for things to kind of help you clue you in onto what, like when you're supposed to hit stuff, you can listen to like, oh, I know I'm playing the guitar part. The guitar is doing this in like the track. I can kind of follow along. And like, if I know the song well enough, I know what the next guitar lick is going to be like. And you can kind of game it that way a bit.
Yeah.
In this, it'll kind of, the tracking kind of switches between like, sometimes it'll follow the vocals, sometimes it'll follow the guitar, sometimes like the it'll follow the drums
or like, whatever. Yeah,
it'll switch mid song. So it's kind of ultimately you end up doing them over and learning where the switches come, like what part at any given time you are following.
Right.
Which is annoying on first plays. It's like, oh, I was following the guitar and then it switched to being about the drums and I didn't catch the switch fast enough and now I'm behind and like, I'm panicking. But the music is fucking sick. Like, I love these songs. And so I...
How many are in the demo?
Five. Five in each.
Oh, wow. That's way more than I thought there'd be.
Each with four difficulties. Beginner, oh, wow. Easy, normal, hard. And so like I played this game a lot, even though there's only five songs, because I wanted to be able to get up to being able to pass on normal with all of them, which I've been able to do over the like week and a half that I've been like kind of just dipping in. It's a great sort of like, I have like 15 minutes, I'll play a song a couple times, like, and then I'm out.
Yeah.
And it just looks like amazing. Like the visual, the aesthetic style is really cool. Like I mentioned before, like if you know Studio Trigger, it has very much that vibe, and lots of great like camera movements when you're trying to track something can be tricky, and I felt like the way that the camera moves around here isn't too jarring, that it's been distracting to me tracking the beats coming in. But they're still kind of dramatic enough that they have kind of a punch to them, you know? Like, it's aesthetically really, like, really well done. And, yeah, I've just been enjoying it a lot, and you should check out the demo, which... and their Kickstarter trailer, which shows some of the other stuff you're supposed to be doing, which is also why I'm really interested in this once it comes out, is, like, there's, like, RPG elements outside of the combat, right? Like, you're walking around and talking to... townspeople or whatever, and doing other, like, you know, dialogue choices and stuff outside of that, which is fun.
It visually also reminds me of like The World Ends With You, or again, like, obviously I think like the running around talking to people stuff is going to you know, feel like Persona's like going around town stuff to some people probably, right? So going to eat beef balls, etc.
But yeah, check out Unbeatable. I forget what they're... Is it just Unbeatable on itch?
Probably. That's my guess. Or at the very least, if you just search Unbeatable itch, it should probably come up.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Unbeatable Arcade Mix
is what it's
called on itch. Yep.
That's
dcellgames.itch.io.
Yeah. And that's a free demo, so definitely worth checking out.
It looks great.
Yeah,
it's visually very cool. I'm curious.
It's got a lot of style.
I will probably wait because if I start playing something like that, I'm gonna want to just like play it.
Yeah, you know? So. I want everything. Give me the whole enchilada. Right. Give me an enchilada. I'm really hungry.
Please. Okay, we should take some quick emails. Gaming@vice.com is the email address. I had some pulled up, and then I changed my tab. Oh, here we go. One of the things that came up recently was talking about playing MMOs and other games in weird locations, like weird physical locations. Michael writes in and says, Highway Point. One of my first jobs out of high school was for a theater as a sound engineer. Our typical events were local productions, dance competitions, concerts, and church services. We almost always had an event booked Friday nights. This was a huge problem because Friday night was also raid night. At about the release of Wrath of the Lich King, I was heavily involved in raiding with my World of Warcraft guild. Work schedule be damned. It wasn't difficult to deal with it if I was working the soundboard. I would throw on my headphones, lock the production room door, and murder some bosses. But sometimes I'd be asked to handle another job for the night, which would make things more interesting. One time we had a production of Oliver Twist that had their lighting engineer quit right before doors opened. Oh. I was asked to run their lighting cues for all the shows. Fuck. Thankfully, the entire show had already been programmed, so all it required was mashing the equivalent of a space bar, which I did with my chin, leaving my hands free to operate my keyboard and mouse. However, my most memorable MMO moment belongs to a local production of High School Musical. Because of some rules I don't quite remember, or maybe I didn't, we didn't trust the specific group, only employees could operate the fly system, the series of ropes that controlled the various curtains and stage scenes that would lift up and down during the show. By Friday night, I had a good sense of timing when the next scene change was needed. This allowed me to communicate with the raid leader that I needed a 2-minute break soon to work the ropes. When I finished, I would then race down the stairs back to the orchestra pit where I had my table and laptop set up. During one failed boss attempt, I was even able to broadcast over voice chat the version of "We're all in this together" that played above my head as my fellow guild members died one by one. I can promise that while attempting to balance all this, I performed neither job well, but that was just fine for local community theater and a casual raid guild. Thanks for the great podcast.
We're all in this together.
Yeah.
That sounds hilarious.
Oh, I did a similar thing, actually.
Wow. I don't doubt it.
I used to work tech at an amphitheater. Well, here's the thing. It was much easier for me because it wasn't productions. It was usually lectures, which is like once I've set up the light that's on the spotlight on the fucking, what's the word for the thing you stand behind? Podium. Jesus Christ. Once you get the light on the podium, you have their keynote queued up and they're controlling it on their end. I don't have to do much. I'm there kind of as an emergency, like, oh shit, something broke person. Mm-hmm. I absolutely played Dota during some lectures sitting in the fucking tech room, just carefully placing my my laptop on the soundboard without hitting any of the fucking dials. Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're in college and you have a job and it's one of the only times where you would normally have free time when you're not doing fucking schoolwork, you have to mix work with leisure.
I feel like that's the did I give my answer for this last time? I don't remember.
No, I think we just asked people. I think we never.
Why did it come up? I don't even remember why it came up. Gita, do you have a weird gaming location in your history?
No, I'm regular. No, it's actually I was not allowed to play video games.
Be me. Right,
like,
sure.
You know, like it was my older brother's thing, and then if I played video games, I was copying him, and I didn't want to deal with that smoke. You know, I just didn't want to deal with that drama as a child. Yeah. You know, I would read my book in the back of the car, and he would bring out the Game Boy, and he'd be the one, you know, being the gamer, and I'd be the one being a little nerd. So I really like it's a combination of knowing I couldn't get in trouble at school because I would be treated differently than the other students, and also like knowing in a social, like the family social dynamic, knowing that video games were not supposed to be my thing and I had to find my own thing. So I mean, I have played The Sims in like college lectures, but that I don't think is unusual at all.
No. Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that was definitely, I think that counts. I think doing that counts. Oh, yeah.
It was astronomy. God. I'm not going to pay attention to that shit. I got a pass. It was a pass, no pass class. Like,
yeah, you're good. There you go. Whatever, right? Yeah. God, there was a similar, I definitely played, there was a game sort of like Crimson Land, that like top-down action game that was like an early indie thing, like pre-indie in a sense. Like back when like, yes, there were independent games on PC that you just downloaded from websites. I don't remember what it was called, but I played it.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. There was something in that vein that was like a that I played a ton of during one specific class in college. I don't remember what it was. It's going to drive me up a wall. I played a lot of stuff during. I worked as like the booth person overnights in college. I may have said this already. But like the, you know, you coming into a residence hall at Hofstra. And like you like check the IDs or whatever.
Yep.
It's like security, except not security at all.
Wait, did you do the grave shift?
Yeah, I did the grave shift. Yeah, absolutely. Me? Yes, of course I did the grave shift.
That was
overnight, every time.
That was my first summer at college. I did the grave shift and played TF2 from, because that's the one thing my
100%
shitty white the white plastic MacBooks from that time. That was right when Steam had released like shit on Macs, and I had the earbuds that cost $1 million now because no one else had them.
I had like a trash Dell that was literally falling apart. The screen had popped out of the like the plastic around it. Amazing. Had to duct tape it back together. Shit. So that was I played stuff on that, but I also would just straight up, like, depending on which thing it was, I would straight up bring a little TV and a little and like a backpack filled with, like, for the 8-hour overnight shift.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You have
makes
to.
Makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So that was those are the fucking days. Let me tell you. Get some, bring my Xbox 360, play some Oblivion on a tiny fucking screen in the cold. That's the other thing. Actually, I guess those are the laptop ones, because those, there's one that was just an outdoor thing, or like
a little box.
A booth outside that was next to like a turnstile. Then, but the ones I mostly worked were indoor ones.
Yeah.
I hated that job so much. Because it's just like, Hofstra was a party school, and it just meant everyone was just drunk. And like, I wasn't trying to get in the way, but like, you have to swipe the card, please. I just need you to swipe your card.
Oh,
I'm
God.
Not trying to be a fucking cop.
We were.
Like, I can't, you know.
I'm Michael looking was a the dry, other way. Just do the thing.
Yes.
Michael was a dry campus, which meant everyone was doing other things that were dry.
I see. Yeah. Perfect.
Oberlin was a fucking shit show. So Oberlin's where I developed my alcohol problems. So that's what that was like.
Right.
Yeah. Senior year, everyone just brought up the cocaine. I was like, okay. I mean, this feels like a natural escalation.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Another person here wrote in, Steve wrote in to say, not exactly an MMO, but I have played Dungeons & Dragons online at the Mumbai India airport. I was flying business class for work, so I made sure to get to the airport hours early to access the business lounge. Drinks and fireballing goblins was a unique experience, to say the least. Yeah, absolutely.
That's
go
a good
for
one.
It.
Fucking,
I would count D&D online as a MMO. I thought that was an MMO back in the day. Maybe I'm misremembering that.
Is it more like a Diablo-ish thing?
Maybe it was more like a Diablo-ish thing. Maybe that's the situation on that one. This next one comes in from Finnin, who says, "Hello, Waypoint crew. Not an MMO, but with Mass Effect Legendary Edition coming out, it reminded me of taking a TV to my friend Jill's house on multiple occasions to play a Mass Effect after release. We would just have our two games in the same room and start up the journey with our alien friends. Very tempted to do that again. We will both be fully vaxxed at this point, but alas, too much of a hassle in the quarantine times." I definitely, when I had roommates that like actually cohabitated, there was definitely a world in which we were like, we got two TVs set up, we're both playing things, and sometimes that would be the same thing and different parts of the same thing or whatever. So I've lived that life.
I only ever had.
I don't mind that so much.
Two TVs in the same room for me would be too much for my ears.
I guess here's the thing, though. Now, I think with the Switch, you can kind of get there halfway where it's like, we have something on TV.
I was playing.
And also, I'm playing something on Switch, right?
My boyfriend's playing a game I can't talk about, and then on the TV. And then I grabbed another game I can't talk about and played it on the couch over the weekend, which was very, very nice to
do. That sounds great.
Yeah.
We only ever had one console amongst the people that lived together, so it was very
one
much
console
a
console for the people.
Yeah. Very much a, we have to kind of carve out time for who's playing what when. There's a little schedule set up.
Yeah,
the whole thing.
You don't get that whole thing. Yeah, totally. Hey, I want to clear this up because we got an email here from Felipe who says, "Okay, so as a Brazilian listener, I basically never get ads on your show. I usually just hear tales of Patrick or Rob doing ad reads. Like that one time Kato included an outtake of an ad that revealed our favorite producers didn't know that Arrow was about the Green Arrow. When I do get any sort of advertisement, though, it's completely mystifying. A few times a voice started talking to me in Spanish about supporting Vice podcasts." We don't speak Spanish in Brazil, Vice.
What the fuck?
"And now this. What is Milk Street? Who is this person in my ear telling me to take a listener survey? Why do they talk as if I'm supposed to know who they are? Waypoint, why does your podcast start as if I'm listening to another show? Thanks, Felipe."
Todd,
did you notice the Milk Street shit
I
this week?
I saw that. We don't know what the fuck is going on, but
I have a theory, and it's kind of depressing.
the way that the podcast that you the ads that you hear work is that they're inserted after the fact. I basically set like little timestamps of like this is where the gaps are, and Acast, our distributor, puts in things based on region mostly. Which
when you say Acast, you don't mean a person from Acast.
No, no, this is you like mean the platform. The platform itself. Yeah, the computer. The computer does it. Automatic. Yeah, it's like all automatic based on like
it's like dynamic basically, yeah. Right? Based on demographic location. So like which is probably why I bet Acast saw, oh, this is someone from South America.
Right.
We're going to feed them what we feed to, which is you identified a huge problem with that strategy.
Right. Yeah.
I think the person from Milk Street, which is, I think, a food thing. I think it's a food thing, which I don't like that name. I don't like Milk Street. I don't like the name. Yeah, I'm not here to diss it. They didn't buy advertisements with me. So I'm completely uninvolved. I think that they were like, we want to have surveys on our listeners and then bought ads. This is my guess.
Yeah.
Bought ads to like run it in front of the podcast instead of just recording it right into the podcast. But I think they bought it in a way that made it go out across multiple other podcasts or something. You are not the first person to have gotten this strange ad. This multiple people wrote in to be like, hey, what the fuck is Milk Street?
Is it an accident or the world's most clever ad insertion? Like
maybe we're all gonna end up
right, because everyone's gonna Google it being like, what the fuck is this? And then
yeah, I just got yeah.
Getting eyes on there, I mean, a certain percentage of the people will be like, actually, I am interested in this.
Yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe you're not wrong.
I don't know how marketing works. I don't know.
Yeah, so sorry to anyone who got that and was very confused. We know that more than just this one person got that and was confused. I got a number of tweets this week that were like, hey, what? Why? Maybe one more question and we'll call it. This is from Chase from St. Louis. I was listening to episode 385 when Austin laid out his fortune cookie etiquette as a reminder. And Gita, you
please
here.
Tell so me my fortune cookie etiquette.
Is that I have to finish the whole meal. I can't go back to my meal. Mm-hmm. If it's fortune cookie time, it's fortune cookie time. Right? And that's it.
With you.
Then I have to break it in such a way that there's no crumbs that fall out of my hand or from the cookie into like the ground. I have to consume the entire cookie. And then I can, and only once I've swallowed, like I'm completely done, can I read the fortune. That's my, it's not an etiquette so much as what I would call a superstition.
Yeah.
You
do.
Yeah.
Right. It's a ritual. Exactly. Yeah. This is what confirms the fortune. Anything else is you're risking stuff.
Yeah.
I don't believe in any of this, except I do it every time. This is all bullshit, but you'll never catch me eating
fortune. When I spill salt in the kitchen, I pick it up and I throw it over my shoulder, you know?
Like, yeah. 100%.
That's it.
Yeah. I don't believe in that shit, but I'm going to do it. Right.
Yeah.
It's a little Mighty Pascal's wager every time.
Yeah.
It costs me nothing to eat the fortune cookie this way and ensure that I don't piss off something that I don't necessarily believe in.
Are you gonna step on that crack? You know, do you like your mom's back?
No, yeah, exactly. Why? It's easy to not step on the crack.
Yeah.
There are things I don't agree with that. Like, I am going to cross a black cat's way. Yeah. I mean, that black cat don't have beef.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm good with cats. Yeah. We're clear.
I'm not walking under that ladder because I'm superstitious. I'm walking under that ladder because it's a safety hazard. You know, like that's it.
I'm not going to break a mirror because of bad luck. I'm not going to break a mirror because mirrors are expensive.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not trying to replace
glass
a mirror
everywhere. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to cut my feet. So. While everything Austin said is true, pre-broken cookies. Also, pre-broken cookies don't count. If I have a fortune cookie that's already been broken in the bag, that cookie is inert. Mm-hmm. And I can do whatever I want to with that cookie. Like, I'll read the fortune on that one because it doesn't matter. It's already lost.
The knowledge that it's not affecting your life whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. While everything Austin said is true, pre-broken cookies don't count. You have to eat the whole cookie before reading the fortune, etc. I follow some additional rules. I realize this is all just made up bullshit, but it's the closest thing I have to religion. So here we go. 1, you must eat your entire meal before you go for the cookie. This shows commitment and proves you're worthy of the fortune. We agree, Chase. We are locked on this one so far.
Yes.
Two, you are the only one allowed to touch the fortune. You don't have to keep it a secret. You're free to read it aloud to other people at the table, but if someone else touches the fortune, it either weakens the power or makes it go away entirely. I like haven't thought about this.
Wishes, might, right? Huh.
Yeah, yeah, right. Totally. You could share it. Yeah, but touching the fortune. That's interesting. Three, you must hold onto the fortune for its powers to continue to work. Throwing away the fortune means forfeiting its power. I also do this.
What?
If it's a fortune I like, I fold it and put it in my pocket for a day.
Yeah.
And that's not... And then eventually, and to be clear, I'm like, oh, the day is passing.
Wash your pants, and it's a little piece of paper in your pants, you know?
That's exactly what it is. Like, I'm going to wash my pants. I'm like, wait, what's in? Oh, this fortune. Right, okay. Only one fortune can be active at a time. Once you open a new cookie and read a new fortune, now the old one becomes void.
Are you sure this is religion or game mechanics?
I think it's game mechanics. You can only have, this is like one fortune a boon equipped or something.
Yeah,
you can't have two contradictory buffs at the same time. I think this is, I think I follow this without necessarily like having
it,
vocalized it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just wouldn't open a second one. You're only allowed one cookie per meal. You can't just rip into a bunch of cookies hoping for the perfect fortune. You must accept what the cookie gives you and wait until your next opportunity.
Yeah.
To quote Austin, you have to show faith in the cookie.
Yeah. This is like the lucky cigarette when I used to smoke cigarettes, you know?
Wait, tell me what was the lucky cigarette?
Every smoker has their like rituals that they do when they buy a new pack of cigarettes. Number one thing you got to do is pack it. You smash, you turn upside down and you smack the pack on your hand a little bit to get the tobacco to go a little bit farther in a cigarette. Unless you're getting American spirits, which are overpacked and they take way longer to burn, then you don't necessarily need to pack them. And then a lot of different smokers have different like little superstitions. I subscribe to both of these. No white lighters. They're bad luck. I've always had every time I bought a white lighter in high school, I would get caught smoking by my parents is what happened. So that's why I stopped buying white lighters.
Yeah.
Yep. And then the other one is you take one of your cigarettes and you turn it upside down and that's your lucky cigarette. And you don't smoke that cigarette until that's your last cigarette left.
Last one.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. Uh-huh. This totally. Yeah. Makes sense.
If you smoke it before, then you break the spell. You know, you're going to have bad luck.
Right.
Which you really don't need when you're smoking cigarettes anyway. Honestly.
That's a twist of fate to give you lung cancer. No. That is not what you want.
Absolutely not. Six writes in. I'm going to read these two back to back because they get us to the same place and I think it's worth doing. I said one more, but then I found these two.
Great.
I was listening to one of the recent episodes and the subject of odd food habits came up. Austin brought up fortune cookies and his approach to the after dinner cookie. Eat the entire cookie, leaving no pieces behind, then read the fortune. This, he said, was to show a commitment to the cookie. I have a similar philosophy, though I take it further. By my brain's logic, for whatever reason, Austin's approach is only 2/3 of the necessary process. There's one step remaining. You must eat the fortune.
Wow.
I realize this is probably not an idea y'all can get behind. To me, this is a perhaps misguided attempt to show respect to the process. My question is this, though I'm guessing you don't do this. What areas of eating do you have extra habits in an attempt to show respect to your food? Do you never salt food that is home cooked? Will you hesitate to modify menu dishes that include components you dislike out of respect for the creator's intent? To be honest, I just want to get y'all to talk about food more. All the best. Six. Thank you, Six.
If
friend of the site.
I am cooking for someone else and they put seasoning on the food before they eat it, I take it as a sign of disrespect.
You have to eat at least a bite.
One bite.
And like a meaningful bite, not a little tiny bite. Yeah. And then if you want to season it after that, that's fine.
Oh, absolutely. David, my boyfriend, loves hot sauce. The hot sauce to him is like a food in itself. But he will take a bite of my food before the way that I have seasoned it before he puts hot sauce on it because I just need him to know how I intended it to be. And I do feel a little bit like if you go to a restaurant and if you ask them to make a change that's not like a dietary restriction or it's an allergy, you are being a little bit disrespectful to the cooks in the kitchen who are working a job and have created systems to make that job really much easier than it is otherwise. And you are disrupting that system. That for me is just a labor issue.
I think there is one exception to that, there are exceptions to that that are around the type of thing it is in terms of like, I think that if you're like, oh, can you not use this spice for a non-dietary reason? I think that's just order something else.
Just go somewhere else.
But if it's like, oh, can I not get this on the sandwich? I feel like that's a little bit more in the realm of like acceptability because sandwiches are already...
They're modular.
A component based. They're modular. Thank you. Yes. Yes, modular. Again, like you can, I think you can go into a pizzeria and say, like a fancy pizzeria, mm-hmm. and ask for one topping change without it feeling like a real problem if you're getting a whole pizza.
Topping, if they're like going to come around and sprinkle cheese on your shit, like that is not an
issue.
Totally. Yeah.
That's not an issue.
But if it's like a soup or like a casserole and you're
a soup especially, because they're making, they're not making a soup one bowl at a time. No. You know what I mean?
Yeah. None of that stuff is pre-made. So.
Yes, 100%.
And just like, if you've ever even been close to back of house in a restaurant situation, you know how streamlined the system is and how one change can really fuck up everything they're doing.
Totally, Marcus, also really quick, from Indiana, says, there was a discussion of fortune cookies on the podcast recently, and I couldn't help but listen intently and wonder if anyone on the pod did what I do with fortune cookies. Sadly, it didn't come up, so I felt compelled to write in. For the first time to ask, do you, after eating the cookie and reading your fortune, if you like it and want it to come true, add in Austin's disclaimer about fortune cookies being bullshit, eat said fortune. I do mean the piece of paper. I have, since I was a small child, and due to this day, to the horror of my wife and child. However, due to the decline of good fortunes and fortune cookies, the practice has slowed considerably these days. Lol. Thank you for all the great work you do. Please keep it coming. Fuck capitalism. Go home. P.S. As I finish this, I realize Gita is not there during my current listen, but seems like the type to have the type that she may have done this, have done this, maybe. Apologies, Gita, if you are otherwise appalled at this thought. Your face did shift when I read that. You did definitely
want to know what it is about me that says that.
I was sitting here
listening to all those people talking about eating paper. Like, halfway, I did that shit when I was a toddler. Come on.
Halfway through that sentence, I thought it was going to be me.
Wow.
I feel like I give off that energy. I don't do it, but I feel like I give off that energy.
Yeah, I feel like you give off that.
I did. I did it as a kid.
To the bit, you know.
That's what it is. Yeah.
I did it as a kid, but I haven't.
You did do it. You ate fortune. Wait, paper or fortune? Fortune cookie paper.
Fortune cookie. Oh, both.
Oh, okay.
I basically had paper
that was around.
I mean, like these people probably have pica, right? Like that thing where you like just eat paper and stuff.
Yeah.
I ate paper as a kid too. Yeah, I did like eating paper. As a kid.
You know,
it's
the texture thing when you're younger, you know, it's very comforting.
And it's like, doesn't even do anything. It's like, whatever.
Wood pulp.
Yeah, it's whatever.
You know? But I think things like being printed on the paper does actually have a weird taste. And so at a certain point, I was like, I don't like this anymore when I was a kid.
Yeah, the chemical dyes that they use. Yeah.
I think I kept eating like blank sheets of like not whole sheets, but blank pieces of paper much longer than I kept eating fortune specifically.
Twirling it up. Yeah. God.
Just sucking up like an entire toilet paper roll, like a bowl of spaghetti.
Wow. Oh my God.
That's disgusting.
That's an image we've given ourselves.
Someone's going to draw that and I'm going to send it to you every day of your life.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Well, on that note, thank you for writing in and sharing your to be clear, I'm not judging anyone who does that, because we're all in the realm of strange rituals at this point. That fortune isn't gonna hurt you. I'm not advocating for it, to be clear. But
I think it's
like legally
you
speaking.
You should eat things that are food, is how I feel. And not eat things that are not food.
that's probably a wise
just for your health, way to for your health.
Through life. Yeah, probably for your health. Yeah. That makes sense. All right. That is going to do it for us. Thank you so much for writing in. gaming@vice.com is the address. You can follow me on Twitter @Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Gita?
@XOXOGossipGita.
Thank you for joining us today.
No,
glad to have you on.
Lovely as always.
Kato, where can people find you?
@A_Kato_appears.
As always, you can follow us twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.vice.com. Do either of you want to shout out anything on the website right now? Gita, what have you been writing? You have anything people should go read about?
I think by the...
Oh, I think there is one that from last week that I love.
Oh my God. There's one about the horrible song that Too Mellow gave us a comment on. It's just like a song that almost definitely... like, is someone who's never composed music before slamming a bunch of samples together because they need their video game needs to have music. But the way that they have slammed a bunch of samples together, it's like not music what they've done. But it plays, and I played this game, Far S Ultra Racing. It's like a pretty decent fun, honestly, and nice looking F-Zero clone, but
yeah, it seems kind of totally fine.
It seems like a really chill game to buy if you want to play a racing game with your partner, which is exactly how I intend to use it, you know, in the future. It's just that once you get to the second level, the song plays, like, please just go to the website and read it and like listen to the song, because it's absolutely wild. Like, it doesn't make any sense,
especially the full version of the song, which keeps, like, there was like a 30-second clip by that was tweeted by Chris Scullion. I want to say
from Nintendo
was
like Live.
Rough,
yeah,
right. And then like if you keep listening to that song, it doesn't stop being wild.
No, it's like a minute and 30 loop, and it does loop perfectly, which is eerie. But it's just like an infinite non-song atonal mess. It's wild.
It kind of rules. Yeah. Why does this video game soundtrack sound like ass? Is available at waypoint.vice.com. You can go read that there. We'll be back later this week with some more Waypoint Radio. Thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track. Miss You Up the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that. waypoint.zone/BOEN. All right. That does it for us. Fuck capitalism. Go home. Peace.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said. Done.
390, you said, yeah?
Colin? Yeah. Okay. 390.
What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint. That's not how I do this. I'm sort of waiting until my glasses are back on. I'm going to give it another shot. That's what I get.